Blog Talk Radio.
Here, the chat is up now. Alright. Well, the chat room is up now. Alright. Oh, no. Everybody left me tonight, I think. Oh, my gosh. Waiting for people to come in.
So, sorry. I forgot to talk about that. Currently I just published my website. You can go there, ChrisTaylorInvestigations.com. I'm just creating a website for a blog or some pictures and things like that on there. So if you're curious about it. Be sure to go on Chris Taylor Investigations to check out my new website. There she is. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing all right. Forgive me, my voice is a little shaky. I have a really bad sore throat.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. Everybody I know has got it pretty much, so. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Tonight we're going to be having Chris and Megan on tonight.
Fantastic.
I know. It's really just good.
And they're from the Paranormal Society of New Orleans, which is local to me.
Yeah. And you know what I'm excited about?
Yeah.
You know what I'm excited about? Halloween is only 3 months away, including this month, because you really haven't gotten into this month yet. But I'm excited.
It's our second biggest holiday here, I think.
Really, Halloween?
It's Mardi Gras.
Yeah. How popular is Halloween there?
Oh, it's always crowded. There's always tons of people. New Year's, Halloween, and Mardi Gras, the top three, is the largest one.
Oh, okay.
Fourth of July, more just like local people, because it's so hot in the summer. A lot of people don't come in the middle of the summer, but they come in the winter because it's warm here, where the rest of the country is really cold.
Yeah. Well, how is your how's the weather down there? I heard it's been really, really hot.
Oh yeah, it's been oppressively hot. But it's August. It's getting this that kind of year that it says it's 90 something. Like right now it says it's 87, but it feels about 10 degrees hotter. So it's always, you have to wake up each morning and check the weather and make sure there isn't a heat warning, an excessive heat warning, or else. You could be in trouble if you don't leave the house with a bottle of water.
Yeah, no, it's been really hot, and nothing happened. So, what is it like? I don't know. Like, do you guys like have a change of season?
I've kind of joked about it. We kind of go from like fall to summer. Or spring, like fall and spring are kind of in the winter. Depends when the plants are blooming. Well, the plants can bloom all year long. It's one of those things of the plants blooming all year long, so you can't really tell what season it is in the winter because it's the same temperature all pretty much between like October and November. I'm told by the Paranormal Society of New Orleans that they're going to be investigating the Andrew Jackson Hotel. Now, that is in the French Quarter. I am told it's on Bourbon Street. I've actually walked by it once or twice. I took a haunted tour a couple of summers ago, and it's actually it was for Fantasia, which was an event that just passed, and I'm sure it's going to be on next year. Local people put that on and promote it, and it's always well done, and it's always a good time. And a DJ comes over. He's a lead singer of the band, the 69 Eyes from Helsinki, Finland. His name's Jyrki. And he comes over and does a DJ thing, and he liked it the first day we came here, so he's been coming back. And they do a haunted tour. And this past year, it was actually hosted by Lord Chaz, who's a very famous tour guide here. A bunch of people might have heard of him. And they do an event on a, I'm not sure which online radio station it is, but it's Bite Me Radio. And so I went on that haunted tour, and we walked by the Andrew Jackson. And the guide we had that year talked about it a little bit. Then we got some guy with a drink came up and started talking to us. I don't know what his deal was, but he was trying to sidetrack us a little bit. But we had fun. It was a very, very good time. And I do recommend the tours in New Orleans. They're very, the tour guides are knowledgeable and they enjoy what they do. And you can tell it's something, it's not one of those, well, today, folks, this is what we're looking at. Look at the building over there. They're not dull. They're very vibrant. They tell stories and they're very, very happy that you're there.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a couple moments before Chris and Megan come on. So I'm just waiting for them.
All right. No worries.
Yes.
So now, what kind of experiences have you had with the paranormal, Amy?
Let's see. I've had a few. I grew up in a very, very kind of famous town for people who investigate the paranormal. The town that Lizzie Borden's from. Now, the old rhyme is Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 X. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. Now, August is actually the month where it happened. I can't think of the exact date off the top of my head right now, but it's sometime during August, and I believe it was 1892. And she was acquitted at the trial. They tried her for the murder of her father and her stepmother, but she was acquitted. Her entire family was buried in a plot in a graveyard that I grew up next to. I could see their family pot from my kitchen window. I was eating dinner and I looked into the cemetery. That was always kind of like around it. And I see, when I was a kid, strange lights in the cemetery. And my parents always chalked it up to, oh, there's people jogging there, there's vandals, there's kids, you know, that there's nothing weird going on. They're very practical people. Nothing weird happened. And my house was old. I hear doors shut. I hear footsteps when I knew my grandmother was the only person who lived above me, and I knew she wasn't home. And I hear footsteps up there. And I'd wonder, like, did she come home? And I'd check, and her car wasn't there. And I'm like, huh, I hear footsteps. I was little. And as I got older, I'd see, you know, I'd still see ghosts in the cemetery. And I finally lived there by myself in my grandmother's old apartment when I was in my early 20s. And I was sitting in my office, which I think had been a her old bedroom. And I was sitting there doing some schoolwork for college. And I remember looking up because I felt like I was being watched. I looked up and there was a little girl standing in the hallway right outside the door. And I just like watched her. And I said, I must be overworking myself. I must be tired. So I, like, at that point, I hadn't really seen anything in a while. You know, you get busy and with day-to-day life, you don't really pay attention. But then I just stopped and looked at it. That's a ghost. That's not. And I blinked and I kind of, like, pinched myself, smacked my cheek a little bit. No, she was there. She was standing right there. And I got up and I looked away and I got up to go closer and she was gone. And I said, okay, that's interesting. And I'd find stuff moved in my apartment. And I couldn't really equate it to my cats because, they'd knock stuff over or move stuff, like, just a little bit, you know, just paw it to the side. But this was stuff that was put up high on something. You know, it had to be picked up and moved. And, you know, I never saw it happen. I didn't think about, like, putting a camera in my house or a tape recorder. I mean, I didn't even think about this stuff back then. I'd never seen a ghost investigation show. I don't think they existed. But, you know, I was always curious as to who that little girl was. I never found out who she was.
Yeah.
I see things in forests. I used to drive through Freetown State Forest, which has been rumored to have satanic rituals go on in it. There was a string of murders in the late 70s, early 80s, and there's a book, and the author's here by name, but I have it somewhere. It's called Mortal Remains. I'll have to find it for the next show, but it's it was a local cop who wrote the book. You can probably find it on Amazon. But it was centered around, like, the prostitution near the center of the city, and a few prostitutes were found out, but they were. It was also said that the person who killed them was into Satanism and performed rituals, and there was a group of them that actually killed these girls, not just one person. And there was this whole scare around that time in that city about this forest. And it's, you know, I've driven through the back, like I take the back roads rather than take a highway, and I drive through this road on my way home. And I see people standing in the middle of the road, and I drive right through them. Or I'd see a lot of fog in weather that didn't dictate fog. It, you know, it wasn't scheduled to be even, it wasn't even like humid outside. There was no fog, or there shouldn't be. Or I'd see a light, and there'd be no electricity, no house there, no nothing. You know, there'd be no explanation for the light. So that's a couple of the paranormal experiences I've had. There are others, but I'll share those another time. Those are the ones that stick out most in my mind. How about you?
I know that. Oh, me? Oh, before I talk about me. Okay, I'll just talk about me first, and then I'll ask you a question I had. Personally, I always, felt interested in paranormal stuff, because I've always felt like a certain, you know, interest in it as a being young and stuff. But
yeah.
I always thought that there was just something like mysterious and interesting about it that drew me to it. As far as like any experience go, well, I would have to say that I think when, you know, you're investigating things like, you know, when you're on location stuff, I think you always, you know, I've never been, like, touched or scratched or anything like that, but, you know, I think that, you know, you always feel like there's someone there in the room or something like that. But,
Yeah, I find a lot of people, even people that don't really, like, necessarily believe in the paranormal, like, say, oh, yeah, I see the ghost. They won't say that, but they'll say, yeah, I felt like I'm being watched. It's like, well, maybe there is something there. Oh, no, there couldn't be. It's not real. It's like, you never know. It's like, you know, science hasn't exactly proven a lot of things that people have faith in, but, you know, it could be on its way. We could have the technology to do it.
Yeah.
We have picked up voices on tape recorders that, you know,
I think that's Megan. Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Megan?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Amy. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Good,
how are
you
doing today?
I'm doing wonderful.
So, you know, we're going to have you guys on tonight. So I just, you know, I wasn't sure if, you know, some of the questions I was going to ask Chris, and I wasn't sure if, you know, if you were aware of all of some of the things that we were talking about yesterday. But, you know, and I was just kind of, you know, talking with him last night, and I wanted to know if you guys could, you know, understand that you guys are going on an investigation in New Orleans to the Andrew Jackson Hotel, and, you know, if you could talk, I don't know if you could talk about the history of the building.
Sure, I can. I can give you a little bit of history and some of the claims that they say go on there. It's on the National Registry of Historic Places, and there's probably quite a few in New Orleans seeing it. We're so rich in history. But it was the site of the courthouse where Andrew Jackson was a major general, and he was indicted for contempt of court and charged with obstruction of justice. He was a major general in the War of 1812, and he became a national hero when he defeated the British in the Battle of New Orleans. So that's obviously why it's the Andrew Jackson Hotel. Before that, it was actually a site for a boarding school in the late 1700s, and they had a devastating fire, which New Orleans had a huge devastating fire that took out a lot of buildings during the same time. But actually, five children had lost their lives in that fire. So a lot of the guests report hearing children's voices, children playing, especially in the courtyard area where there's obviously nobody at night. So there's a lot going on there. They say the second floor is probably the most active, and the courtyard cottages. But pretty much they have experience, everybody's had experiences all over the hotel, just mostly centered around children.
Okay. Yeah, what, I'm sorry, Amy.
No, go ahead.
So during this, the fire, how much of this, of the city was just destroyed?
Probably, I'm pretty sure the majority, if I can remember, the majority of what we now know as the French Quarter, because that was the heart of, that was New Orleans. It was called the Great Fire of New Orleans. It happened in 1788. So it did burn a lot of New Orleans at that time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, when you go into this location, what do you plan on, What do you plan on bringing with you and setting up to find it?
Of course, we're going to bring all our, you know, digital recorders, our spirit boxes. We're going to have all our surveillance night vision cameras set up. Probably bring in some trigger objects that, you know, children may like to play with, and see if we can kind of figure out why these kids are still here and find out what's going on and figure out where the center of all this activity is going on. But we'll bring in every piece of equipment we can possibly think of to capture some evidence for the Andrew Jackson Hotel.
Now, is that the children's home, is that the only paranormal experiences they're having there? It's just only that event, or is there anything else?
They say that they've seen a man, more of a shadow-type figure resembling Andrew Jackson there because of his, you know, awful court proceedings that happened on that ground after being, you know, a war hero and everything else.
Yeah.
But they claim to see him, and they do have a lot of history on their grounds, not only, you know, being on the actual land itself, but they have old cannons and a lot of the history from that time period in the area. So people have seen more than just children, but the majority of the reports that come in are children playing, hearing children laughing, hearing children talking and running. But it would be kind of cool if, you know, Andrew Jackson was still there, being able to, you know, see history come full circle again.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, when you're on the investigation.
I've walked by the outside of that. I've just never been inside of it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful location.
So when you're on an investigation, Megan, are you ever scared of it being there? Or are you, you know, do you get frightened, or, you know, do you just jump like right into it?
I pretty much just jump right in. I kind of go in with the mindset that as long as I don't allow anything to hurt me, then, you know, I'm not going to get hurt. And, of course, I take every precaution that we can. And I have all my big brothers on the team that make sure they're like my little bodyguards. So, but, no, I'm pretty calm and collected and just kind of go in. Chris always laughs about me being head first in an attic. The first one up in there where they say most of the activity happens in a house, and I jumped right in the attic and went to town. But I'm kind of that type of person anyway. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it.
What was the, you know, if you don't want to go into detail, that's fine. And what was the last case you had, and what did you hope to find there?
The last case that I actually was able to go on due to my scheduling conflicts with, you know, Mrs. New Orleans, and we're actually in the process of opening a store here in Slidell. We went to a home in New Orleans with poltergeist-type activity, and although I didn't have, I will say I was very hesitant about what the claims were, and even leaving the house that night, I was like, you know, I don't have that feeling. I don't feel like anything's here. But after, obviously, after evidence review, it was a completely different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the last one that I did. But I know we've got a few coming up.
Was that a residential case?
Yes, it was a residential case. And they are happily, in their home again and have reported that paranormal activity has definitely decreased since we were there and the house had been cleansed.
That's great.
That's really
so it hasn't
great,
stopped
yeah.
completely, but it has decreased with any negative activity?
Not that I'm aware of. She has not gone into any kind of detail. She's been very just overwhelmed with, you know, it was a terrible situation for their family. It affected their
yeah.
kids. It was affecting their marriage. And I mean, she's just been so thankful that everything has gotten so much better for them, and that's why we do what we do.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, I just think that when you guys go into a case, I know that Chris has talked about when you guys cleanse the home. How often do you guys cleanse the home? Do you guys do that like every time you guys go in, or do you do that like when it's necessary?
Usually we try to, because most homeowners and most of the people living in these residences don't want the activity, and then you have some who have activity. They don't feel it's a negative presence. They just want to know what or who, or just, you know, the pure documentation of something going on. But usually if the family is frightened or weary or don't want those things going on in their homes, then yes, we go ahead and cleanse the house.
Okay. What, now, as far as the future goes for the team, do you have any idea of where you want to be in 5 years from now? You know, your team, do you guys want to, you know, are you looking to be, you know, like the premier team in New Orleans? Are you looking to be, you know, well-known? Or are you just looking to be, you know, being as you are, you know, doing what you do best and just to help people?
I'm sure we'd love to be well-known, but well-known for our ability to help, that we're there to offer guidance and open minds and help people. I don't think I know that there's nobody on the team who sees this as, you know, a show on TV, or we're perfectly content knowing that, you know, if we helped one person, then we did something. And that's the pure pleasure for us. Obviously, we love the evidence. We love the experiences. We love what we do. But number one is we want to make sure that our clients are happy, that we're bringing them peace or answers or anything that they're looking for that we can possibly provide for them. So I think the long-term goal is, you know, to be well-known, that people can reach out to us in confidence for help, to answer
okay.
questions, to be there for them.
Okay. When, you know, in the future, do you guys have any, like, social gatherings, any conferences that you guys would like to plan?
Actually, we're planning on doing a Halloween charity event and have maybe, like, a haunted house party, gala-type event where we can donate to charity. We'd love to get more involved in the community and charity. And that way, you know, we can give back to those who aren't in need and still be a valuable part of the community. And, you know, our name is out there as in a positive light, because that's really what we want, is we want to make sure that people know that we're here to help, and we're much more than just paranormal investigators.
Hmm. No, when you say you're more than paranormal investigators, I'm so sorry, Amy.
Chris had mentioned previously that you guys were talking about charity tours or tours for charity.
Yes, actually, we've been in talks with a local haunted history tour to start doing like live ghost hunts with people who are on the tour and donating that money to charity. There's a lot of other communities who are doing it, and New Orleans being ranked number one in haunted history or not. So, I mean, if we can give back and we can give people, we get so many requests for people to join in on investigations. If we can do that and we can put the money towards, you know, really nice charities and help out somebody else, then we're all for it. And it seems that the tour company is really excited about the opportunity as well. I think it's just now down to working out how to make it happen, how to get it started, and obviously the charities that will be involved.
Okay. But you said that you're more than a paranormal investigator. Do you mean that maybe, do you feel that being a paranormal investigator is more than just investigating the paranormal, but giving back to people as well?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thrill, don't get me wrong, and doing it is a lot of fun. I mean, it has its moments, it has its stress, but to see that one person smile and enter their home again and feel safe and comfortable, then we know what we did was right, and that's why we do what we do.
Okay.
And it's a great way to open the minds of so many other people that they're, you know, history is still there. It's still among us. You may not see it. You may not feel it, but it's definitely there.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, when you were investigating the paranormal, would you say that would be your favorite thing is seeing people, you know, happy and, you know, relieved that you know, that they're, whatever they were going through is over?
Yes, most definitely. Hearing, you know, having a happy client is well worth it. Hearing thank you, or you put my family back together, my home feels so inviting and welcoming, I feel so comfortable, you know, being back in my home. That's definitely what we're there for. And I can probably speak for everybody on the team that that's the best feeling of it all.
Now, what is your position on the team? Is it are you an investigator or are you public relations?
I do both, but because of a lot of my scheduling conflicts, I've mostly been centered on public relations. But of course, every chance I get to go investigate with the team, I do. I think I'm having identity crisis, and Chris and I laugh all the time. He says beauty queen by day, ghost hunter by night, but I have, you know, two children, a husband, a home, family. So I think I'm having a little bit of identity crisis, but even if just writing to people or getting in touch with people or just listening to somebody that just needs to get it off their chest about what they're going through, then, you know, I feel like I'm a very valid part of the team. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's where our team does really well, is we all know our strengths and we all have very different strengths and we can feed off of each other and we know who to direct in what direction or to what person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chris just messaged me, Megan, and he said he'll be on in 3 minutes. So in case, you know, he starts talking, you know, just wanted to let you know. But I have a really important question. When you're investigating, and, you know, I think this is kind of important, but when you're investigating and you bring something home,
Okay. Has that ever happened to you before?
Luckily, no, it has not happened to me. And we do go to great lengths, because I do have young children, to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And luckily it hasn't. My husband did tell me when I first started this and all, you know, my family's experiences in the paranormal, that if I bring a ghost home with me, he's going to divorce me. So I better not bring anything home.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I was just, you know, interesting in how that would play out, because, I mean, it is kind of, I don't want to say, you know, dangerous, but it'd be concerning that, you know, you'd bring something home, and, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, how after, you know, an investigation, you just go back to being your normal self. You know, I'm sure, you know, it must be hard to you know, be in, like, the paranormal mode, and then go back to living, like, a normal life, and, you know, and kind of keeping those two separate. I wasn't sure, and if you know what I'm talking about, and how do you deal with it?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, when I walk through my front door, with the exception of emails or phone calls or anything, you know, first and foremost, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, and I'm just like every other mom. And so number one are my children, and neither one of them are strangers to the paranormal world. My son actually has talked to Chris on a few occasions about somebody he sees in the hallway, and we're still trying to figure out that one. He's the only one that seems to have seen it, but he's also the first male in our family. It's always been women in our family that have had experiences, never a male. So he's also the first male in the family, so I don't know if that, you know, why things happen that way. But I do honestly think that my great-grandma, who helped raise me and spent really until she died, from the time I was born until she died, I think she's always with me. That she's always given me little reminders of her being here with her things. I can have them in one place and leave or go to sleep and come back and they're in another place. So I think she probably plays a big role in making sure that we're safe. And really, all the paranormal experiences started with her. So I think she plays a little role in that. And just recently we went out to an investigation, and across the spirit box, we were just kind of listening, and we started talking about family members, and I just happened to mention her. I said, you know, it'd be really awesome if my grandma Fran could come through the spirit box. And not 30 seconds later did she say, it's Fran. A woman said, it's Fran. And I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to buy that yet, because it could be anybody saying that. They could be listening to me and they could say that. And so I casually asked, I have a hope chest from the 1800s that my grandpa's uncle made by hand. And I keep all of my family heirlooms that I can in my hope chest. And so I asked the spirit box, I said, okay, if this is really my grandma Fran, tell me what's in my hope chest that belongs to you. And she said, a blanket. And sure enough, in my hope chest, I have a crocheted blanket that she had made for somebody or herself a long, long time ago. So
wow.
I really think she still plays a huge role in our lives, and my two children are her only great-great-grandchildren, so I think she's enjoying watching them grow up.
That's really great. You know, I just want to introduce Chris on to the show right now. Hello, Chris. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How's everybody doing?
You're doing great. You know, and I was just talking to Megan about how, you know, protection and, you know, trying to keep, you know, your normal life and paranormal life separate. Now, as far as protection goes, Chris, how do you protect yourself and your group?
I have a priestess that I consult with on a weekly basis that I go and see, and she protects me. Also, you know, a lot of people that are in our support group send out prayers. You know, we take certain precautions. Realize that sometimes no matter what you do, something can attach itself to you. It's just about acknowledging what to do when it is attached to you. And also, my house is like a spiritual fortress. Nothing can really... My house is cleansed to the T. I do it like maintenance, like clockwork. At least the longest I'll go is a month before I'll cleanse it. And it's a full cleansing, and I have protection all around my house. So, because I have family members that live with me that, you know, I wouldn't want anything to happen to them. But they know the risk that, you know, we all take. We all know the risk that we take in doing this stuff. And it can get kind of dangerous. But I really believe, like, if your faith is really, really strong, nothing can touch you. You know? So that's pretty much how I protect myself.
Yeah. When, what would you probably the most hostile, you know, hunting that you've handled so far?
What was the what?
Most hostile hunting.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble understanding you, Chris. You said the most possible haunting?
Hostile, like negative.
Oh, the
negative
most awful haunting?
Yeah, like
it
like
probably had to be. Yeah, it probably had to be Denham Springs.
Definitely. Paranormal
yeah,
and
be,
not.
Yeah. Yeah, Denham Springs was. I actually had something follow me home, and we actually think something followed Jeremy home. But actually disguised itself and tricked Jeremy into inviting it in. Probably a month later. So, yeah, the evidence that we got from there and the family that lived there, that was just a very, very horrible haunting, you know. And I think it was they had a couple of a few spirits there, but there was one really controlling everything. And you know, when we did that first cleansing, it was mainly like a laugh in our faces. The cleansing wasn't done right. That's why I had to call Jeremy in to do it the second time, and that one worked. But I mean, I could tell because the man that lived there was probably, you know, I believe something had control over him. I don't know if he was fully possessed or not, or if it happened in spurts. But when we left, and he came up to shake all of our hands, it wasn't the same guy, and he had a cocky look on his face, kind of like, yeah, I got y'all. Y'all weren't as bad as I thought y'all were. You know, it's kind of that look. But the people who were suffering from it were the children, and, you know, it really attached itself to the wife of the family and just really made their lives miserable, you know. That was pretty rough. That was probably the worst one.
It was, and like I said, it was probably the worst one, paranormal and non-paranormal.
Yes, yeah, not paranormal, yeah. It just goes to show, like, if you're leaving, living a negative life, and you're not doing with the good things in life, you know, good things aren't going to happen to you, you know. Bad things happen to good people, but bad things also happen to bad people, you know. And I'm not saying these crimes were bad, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But his clients definitely, you know, weren't on the right track that they needed to be on. And, you know, and hopefully they can, you know, get back on the right track that they need to be on. Because I could come and I could cleanse somebody's house a thousand times, but if you don't start doing the things you need to do to keep that door closed, there's nothing I can do. You got to be, just like anybody in life, you got to want to help yourself. You know, until you reach your hand out and let somebody grab it, nobody's going to grab it. So,
was
kind of how it
was.
Is.
Was it, yeah. Was that case, I don't want to say demonic, but was it demonic or was it just, you know, just a really, you know, just nasty?
I don't have evidence that it was demonic, even though some people will argue over the evidence that I have that it was demonic. I'm not going to come out and publicly say it was demonic. I will say it was very evil. You know, because you can have evil spirits out there, very aggressive evil spirits. So,
very hostile.
Very hostile, yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, it was demonic and all this and that, because I don't have the I don't have enough evidence to come out and say that. But I will say it was very evil. It wasn't good. What was it?
The atmosphere, yeah. Altogether, the neighborhood, everything. It was heavy. It didn't feel good. I don't think.
Felt like you were in Twilight Zone.
Yeah, and I think Chris can agree. Even the drive up there, I think everybody had that little bad feeling in the pit of their stomach of dread,
mm-hmm.
of something's not right. And, I mean, sure enough, between the paranormal stuff that was going on in their home, and there's a cemetery across the street from them, and a car comes out of nowhere and flies out of there, almost hitting one of our investigators. It was, I mean, the whole experience as a whole was very
yeah.
negative. It was
you
very.
Know, real quick, this was the case that had me question my faith, like how strong my faith actually was, and this was the case that actually went me that made me go and pursue a priestess. Who's now, like, you know, I consider her my priestess. This is the case that had me walk into her environment and say, look, I need some help. I need help.
There for a few
and
days.
And she's like,
was,
she looked at me.
It
the
was
first
low.
Time I saw her before that case, you know, she didn't really, she was just like, oh, hi, how you doing? She's clairvoyant, too. And she's one of the most respected priestesses out there. I'm not going to say her name or anything. But, you know, she was just kind of, she didn't take me serious, you know. She's like, oh, you're a ghost hunter. That's cute. And I was like, yeah, you know. And that was just when I was getting some sage for somebody. And it was the first time I walked in. I didn't pay no mind. You know, it's a cool place. And after I started experiencing the oppression, I'm going to call it, after it was the first time I went to Dillon Springs, where I was having violent thoughts. I was wanting to hurt myself. I was wanting to hurt other people. It was very bad. I was life was horrible for a while. And I walked in there and I asked her for help. And all of a sudden, her whole facial expression, her whole attitude and everything changed. And all of a sudden, she took me 110% serious. You know, and ever since that moment, we became actually really good friends, you know, to where actually I'll sit in the, you know, I'll go and see her every week and we'll sit in her temple and we'll talk about what cases I have coming up, you know, and she's always like, look, if you need me, I'm there. And she's a world famous priestess, you know, so, you know, I could tell that she saw something that was not right with me since the first time. And she's kind of taking me underneath her wing, so.
Okay. Well, have you ever been to a person's house? Oh, I'm sorry, Amy. Go right ahead.
Go ahead. This will, I guess, tie in at the end.
Okay. Have you ever been to someone's house and used, like, divination, like, deviation or a Ouija board or anything like that?
I mean, the Ouija boards were actually there. I mean, because I'll tell you, Jeremy always says this, every haunting is different, but they all have the same undertone. Like, when people go out, and I've talked about this, I don't know if people follow me on Facebook or not, I've talked about this on Facebook several times. When people play with Ouija boards, or they play with spirit boxes, or, you know, they try and be a little ghost hunter for a night, you know, you're really playing with fire, because you're opening up a door, and you're letting stuff in, and you can't close that door. You can't control what comes through that door, you know. And it's really dangerous what you're doing. And everybody I ask, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's, yes, I have played with a Ouija board. Yes, I have done this. And it's like, okay, well, you know, this could be the reason. It might not be the reason for that case, because you have to look at every single case at all the details, all right, because we're investigators. What we're doing is we're trying to get to the source of the problem here. Like, how are you living your life to open up this door? You know, why are these spirits here haunting you? What is it? You know, is it ancestral haunting? Is it demonic haunting? Is it, you know, did you play with a Ouija board and open something up? So, you know, I tell everybody, if you got a Ouija board, get rid of it. Don't burn it, all right? Just get rid of it. Don't play with it, because more and more people are starting to be aware and realize, because of social media and everything like that, that people go through these things, and it's very dangerous.
Yeah. Why do you think people, you know, when you go into a case, why do you think they, you know, what is the reason for using the Ouija board? Was it just to play around, or?
It's always curiosity. It's always curiosity and to have fun. You know, like most of these people that want to be paranormal investigators and, you know, start up their own team and do this and do that. And, you know, they see it on TV and they go, wow, that looks fun. I want to do that. And, you know, you really don't know what you're doing. So, yeah, I mean, it's all curiosity. I mean, why do we do anything in life? You know, we're curious. You know, and I guess that's separated from the people who are clairvoyant, because people who are clairvoyant, you know, I think they have a calling, or they have an ability to actually help somebody, you know, then that's something else. But that's different from going, wow, I see this person on TV. That looks fun. Or, hey, let's play with a Ouija board and mess with the stairs. That seems fun. Let's get scared and get our adrenaline pumping. You know, there's a big difference from that. So,
well, I don't know if anybody follows Amy Bruni from Ghost Hunters on Facebook, but I actually do. And actually yesterday she had posted a poll asking people about if they had used a Ouija board, when, what their experience was. And nine times I went through, I don't know how many of the people who responded, and nine times out of ten, the person said, yes, they had.
Yeah.
And most of them, and probably out of those people, eight out of ten said that they had a negative experience with it. I have never actually used a Ouija board myself, so I can't really say either way. But I just thought it was curious, or very interesting, that we were talking about Ouija boards and she had just posted that question.
Yeah, well, I was one of those, I'm going to go ahead and use the word ignorant people. You know, when I was a kid, I played with the Ouija board. Somebody had it, and it was only that one time. But even me getting into paranormal investigating was out of curiosity, you know. It wasn't because I felt like I had a calling or anything like that. I was a skeptic, and I just did it because it seemed fun, you know. But the difference is I reached that fork in the road to where it's like, okay, you know, I see how serious this stuff is starting to get, you know, and I'm at a roadblock here to where, like, should I switch a team? Should I start my own team? Or what should I do? And I just felt like I had a calling to help people. So that was my passion and pursuit, to push forward and to do all the research I could, to learn everything I could about it. Because I tell you what, you know, going in and gathering evidence for somebody and showing them that they're not crazy and they actually have spirits in their house, and cleansing the house and talking to them a week later and just hearing the change in their voice, that's priceless. You know, that's worth all the hours and hours of research and the money and the drama and everything like that, that I speak for myself, I personally put into this. I know Megan does it. You know, I know John and Ryan do it too. You know, we all put all this time and effort into this, and we know why we do this, you know. And to us, it's not going around and trying to find Casper. It's to help people, you know. And we like to mix it up a little bit, and you know, we feel like we like to reward ourselves by being able to investigate a historical site here and there, you know, just to enjoy the history of a place. But we're mainly in this to help people, and that's bottom line, you know.
Okay. When you're on an investigation, you know, and I was, you know, kind of not really sure what you guys do as far as you guys do anything different as far as, you know, using equipment. You guys use, like, different new equipment, you know, because I know that Ryan is your equipment manager, and wasn't sure, you know, if he's doing anything to kind of, you know, as far as developing new, you know, equipment. And
well, right now Ryan's about to start working on some new IR lights. Right now we're not, you know, he's not patenting anything, if that's what you're asking. You know,
yeah,
but we're always willing to, you know, we're not the geniuses to where, like, you know, we invented a new piece of equipment, you know, maybe one day with years and years of experience. But there's people out there in the paranormal world that are doing, you know, a lot for the field and pushing the field forward. And I was talking to somebody, I forget who I was
Chris,
talking to.
Chris, when are you not talking to somebody?
Huh? Yeah. But, you know, he was talking about, you know, different ideas he had and different uses of equipment he was doing. And I was like, oh, his name was Angelo from Canada. I was talking to him on Facebook. And what he was doing was designing different types of sound waves for the spirit box. Instead of using the waves, he was using electronical sounds for spirits to communicate through us with. And it was very creepy and very weird, and I didn't know what he was talking about most of the time. But you know what? The only thing I can say is, look, man, I really appreciate what you do. I admire the heck out of you, and I respect you, because it's people like you are the reason that 20 years from now, we're going to be able to have a full conversation with spirits, and we're going to know exactly what we need to know, you know? And he was pretty grateful for that statement. But, you know, if a new technology comes out, we're willing to use it. We're willing to try it. You know, we're open-minded. We're not going to stay stuck in the Stone Age, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When you guys like to use the spirit box a lot, do you guys how many versions of the spirit boxes do you guys have? And have you noticed any kind of differences between the different ones?
Well, the spirit box that we had the AM detuned with the removable antenna, and that really just takes out the static and the white noise, which makes it a lot easier to hear what comes through, like 50 times more, you know. And then we have a regular one that sweeps at like 80 instead of 100. In different mm-hmm. channels. I'm trying to think right now. I'm having a brain fart. But that's just a regular one with the white noise. But that's what we have, and that's what we use. So, I mean, if there's a different spirit box to come out, you know, I'm keeping my eye out for it. You know, it's so messed up because I wanted to get the Heck box, but it's so hard to find now since Radio Shack completely changed how you do it. And I saw somebody was able to modify it with a toggle switch and solder some wires into the base of it. But it's just you can't control the sweep on it, and it was sweeping way too fast. So I didn't really feel it was a good investment for the team to experiment with that. So, but like the Sanjian, you know, they also did the same thing. So they changed it. Instead of the pins, they changed it to ribbons to where you used to just take it apart and bend the pins. Well, now you can't do that anymore. They changed it to ribbon. But Sanjian went a step further and actually kept the pins but changed the whole switchboard and still called it the same model. And I'm going to tell everybody that are listening right now, if you shop on Amazon, they're still putting that Sanjian up on Amazon as a spirit box. If you buy it, it's no good. So you're just wasting $40. Trust me, I learned that from trial and error. So don't do that. So, but we're trying different experiments in different ways. We're always, you know, there's a lot of people out there that, on YouTube and Facebook that try different things, and I'm always keeping my eye out for what's the next thing coming out that we could use.
Great. Yeah. Well, was you know what they have out, and I wasn't sure if you guys used it yet, was the shadow detection.
Oh, that's with the that's by Ghost Stop. That's the red laser shadow detector. It can actually if you pass in front of it, a shadow does. It can actually take a picture of that and form you a 3D image of what the shape of that shadow is. Yeah, I mean, we'll be looking into getting one of those pretty soon. I think they're like $80, you know?
Yeah.
But I haven't personally tested that out yet, but it looks like a good piece of equipment. Like, you know, if you have something that can program straight into your computer right there and then when a shadow passes over, you know, then you'll have not only hopefully a video camera of that shadow or somebody's personal experience seeing that shadow, but an actual 3D image. So that's a good piece of equipment. I would recommend that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm talking about shadows now. Megan and Chris, how have you guys experienced the legendary, shadow people that everyone talks about, the dimensional shadow people?
My only experience is... and I'm pretty sure my mom's listening in right now. She, pretty much everybody in the family refuses to sleep with me anymore, thank goodness. They're probably all happy I'm married off and my husband has to deal with me. But on a few different occasions, I don't see shadow people, but she told me on the occasions that it's happened that especially when my great-grandma was in the hospital and ill, and her mom shortly after that was in the hospital and ill, I would sleep with her, my dad being a military man as well, my husband is as well. My dad was always gone, so mom was nice, and it was always just her and I, so I'd get to sleep with her. Well, I would wake her up, and she said I would be clear as day, my eyes are wide open, and I would tell her the people in the room, some of them I had never met. For example, I told her there was a little boy in the room and he wouldn't stop crying, and I wanted her to make him stop crying so I could go to sleep, and I described him. Little did I know that a family member of ours had a son who was born very much deformed and did not live very long. and it was a little boy, and I never knew about him. And I would tell her, you know, that her grandma was by her bed, and she wanted her to know that it's okay, everything was going to be fine, she loves us, she's going to stay around as long as she can. And shortly after that, the phone would ring, and it would be, you know, somebody letting my mom know that her grandmother had passed and then that her mom had passed. So no shadow people. No, I get people, and I don't really recall much of it afterwards, but I describe everything clear as day. And my mom and I, we will dream the same dream with family members on the same night in the same location. And actually, when my son was really young, I went over to my parents' house, and I was telling my mom a story about a dream I had about my great-grandma Fran, the one that I was so close to. And I said, yeah, it was great. You know, she was holding and rocking William, and she was reading him the story of Pinocchio. And my parents' eyes just kind of went wide open. They had been at a thrift store that day and came across the Pinocchio book and bought it. So I don't really get a whole lot of shadow people. My son says he sees a shadow person in the hallway. Nobody else has yet to see it. He says it doesn't scare him. And it looks like a person. It's just really dark and has some white qualities to it. But he doesn't seem frightened of it. And lately he hasn't spoken about it at all. So we're not real sure who that is.
No, Chris, where do you think they come from?
Oh, shadow people?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, maybe they see, I mean, I believe that all spirits are just, you know, apparitions or just manifestations of energy. Like when you see orbs, that's just condensed energy. That's them traveling through. So, like, I've seen pictures to where, like, I've seen an orb, and then I've seen an orb form into an apparition. So that's kind of where my theory comes from. If they get enough energy to form, then they will do that. But they can only do it for so long. So I think they keep just enough energy, because energy can either be created or destroyed to survive or move around or stay within our realm, you know. But shadow people, I just think, are a different manifestation. I've seen shadow people. One time I was working, I was at a graveyard, and I was looking down. I was on a case, and it's actually Dillon Springs, and across the street was a graveyard. And I'm standing there outside the cemetery, working on a piece of equipment. Darn thing wouldn't work for some reason. So, and I look up, and right when I look up, I see a shadow shoot right across. It probably had to travel at least 40 feet before it just disappeared. And I was just like, holy crap, that was a shadow. And I was like, did anybody else see that? And of course, they're like, no. And I was like, you know, I just saw a shadow. And the second week when we went back to Stem Springs, Jeremy had went into the graveyard with somebody else. I think it was John. And when he came back, he grabbed me. We went and walked around to the other side of the cemetery, and he's like, dude, you can see shadow people all over. And I look up, and he's like, look right over there. And you can see several of them just shooting across, like, really quick. Like, they would form and disappear and shoot across. So, you know, it was like the shadow people. So I think, you know, shadow people can be anything. So you hear about these different cases when it's a haunting and it's of a spirit, you hear claims of shadows. So I just think it's just another manifestation.
Okay.
Well, the energy has to go somewhere.
Like when we die, you know, the energy can either be created or destroyed, and we actually run off of DC. So where does that energy go? Where does it go? Nobody has the answer to that question. And I know John, on our last investigation, saw a shadow. We walked up into this house. We weren't there 2 minutes, not even a minute. And we walked towards the threshold of the hallway, and I was behind John. I saw his jaw drop, you know, so he saw a shadow then.
Yeah, well, you know, I saw that the pictures of the St. Louis Cemetery number 2 that you guys took. Did you guys get to investigate it?
they won't let anybody do an overnight investigation there, period. So nobody, no team. You know, and they got security cameras up there. And I was like, you know, I thought to myself, I wonder who's watching those security cameras.
What reason do they give for you not being able to do an investigation there?
What's that, Amy?
What reason do they give for you not to be able to do one there?
The marketing director wouldn't even give me a reason. So,
okay.
I mean, you don't want to, when you talk to people who run a business or a historical site or something like that, and they tell you no, you don't want to push it because you don't want to ruin any chance for them maybe changing their mind in the future. So let's say a year or two goes by and they make a decision to do it, you know, they're going to be like, no, I told him no. He was really nice on the phone. He didn't push it or anything like that. So I might give him a call, you know. So if they say no, I don't ask any questions. I say, okay, thank you, you know.
Have there been other cemeteries that you've investigated that were receptive to it?
Well, people at the cemeteries or the spirits there?
No, I'm just getting into the cemeteries to do the investigation.
I have a friend who's an archaeologist cemeterian, and what he does, he's done travel all over the world. He's probably your modern day Indiana Jones. He's a really good friend of mine, and he's out of Macomb, Slidell area, and he's got some stories too. But as he's working on a cemetery, like remodeling it, or they're going to go in and just take care of the tombs there or something like that, you know, he's got no problem with us going in there and investigating.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
but look, guys, I gotta run. But I had a really great time, and I appreciate y'all. And I'll talk to y'all later. Okay.
All right. Well, see ya.
Have a good night.
All right, Megan. Well, as far as your groups and you know. Well, the cases that you have coming up, was were any of them going to be, you know, public investigations, or were they residential, besides the Andrew Jackson?
Andrew Jackson actually has a sister hotel that we will probably be investigating shortly after, and we're actually in talks with a few other places about going in. They've expressed some interest about having us come in, so we're just trying to get all the timing right to be able to go in and sit down and figure out what places are looking for. And I believe we just recently got another phone call. We get a lot of phone calls for residential, especially, you know, people hearing from friends and family that we went in, helped them, they feel so much better. The calls just seem to keep coming in, so those are obviously number one priority, is getting into the residential homes and taking care of what needs to be taken care of there.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure, like, what I can talk about as far as your cases coming up, but were there any other public investigations on any public places that you have coming up that you could talk about?
We're looking at a time frame, hopefully August or September, for Southdown Plantation, but still in the works. They have a lot going on, but it's a beautiful plantation home. And there's some other ones that are in talks with. I just don't feel comfortable really saying that, you know, going in or out, because I don't want to put them in an uncomfortable situation until all details have been worked out. But, I mean, again, first and foremost, we want to help the people that really need the help, because pure pleasure for us is being able to go in to, you know, a fun location and just see what's there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Yeah, well, Amy just wanted to say goodnight here. Phone dropped, and she, you know, wasn't feeling well. So she was gonna
So she just wanted to say goodnight to everyone, you know, before.
Well, I hope she feels better.
Yeah, she wasn't feeling too good, so. Yeah, well, let's go look back. Was your team going to do any kind of, now, okay, now I have a question. As far as your cemeteries go, do you guys usually go to cemeteries, or is it just kind of, you know, like a thing you just go to just for fun, or?
We go really just for fun, and really not too often. Mostly like in our off time, if we have some, which for all of us is rare, especially if it's outside of an investigation, trying to align for people's work schedules and family schedules gets a little difficult. But that's usually just a, let's go see what's there, let's see what equipment does,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of a more of a let loose, be ourselves, have some fun together type investigation.
Yeah. Now, how far spread are the residential investigations that you guys do? Do you guys usually stay in the, you know, New Orleans area, or have you actually gone out of the area to do the residential?
We've gone a couple hours away. We have no problem. If it's possible, then we're more than happy to go. So, I mean, really, we've gone a couple hours from here. We've been local. It's just, you know, depending on what kind of case it is, if it's a family that's really needing some help, then we have no issues with traveling to that location.
Okay. Have you guys done any investigations in Slidell?
Yes, we have. We've done, we have a very active cemetery here, and we actually did a store who, the cops are probably getting tired of phone calls from them when the store is closed and everything is shut down. Their alarm, they'll have a huge light come across their surveillance cameras, and it's being recorded, and it's just the light, but it'll trigger broken glass alarm, or the lottery machine will turn on and off. But unfortunately, when we went in to investigate, we have to set up another date to be able to go back in there, but it was really quiet. The only thing we can get over the spirit box was it said our name a couple times, and that was about it. Other than that, it was a very quiet night, and just the surveillance cameras. I guess if there is something there, then they really like those cameras. But it's been enough
yeah.
that you know, the alarm's gone off and have had to have the police come out to secure the premises when their doors are still locked, windows are intact, yet there's a huge light, and then all of a sudden an alarm goes off or the coolers turn off. So we've done that, and I think there was one more here, and it was very interesting, but she had a lot of, I don't really say gothic type stuff, but she came from a very religious family, so it was kind of difficult dealing with the modern age of her as a teenager and a very religious family life. But she was one of those cases with Ouija boards and
okay.
and stuff decorating her room.
Okay, so she was basically kind of like into, like, you know, the whole, I don't know how to say it, like, the whole New Age magic thing.
Yeah. Yeah, she really was. Bless her heart. Very, very sweet girl. She just, I think she kind of got into something that she really wasn't educated about, and then was a little scared.
Okay. Now, do you guys, when you guys go out on an investigation, do you ever,
do you ever, does the family's religious background have any, like, effect in how you investigate?
Well, of course, you know, if they, usually families don't really have any special requests as to how investigations are conducted, but obviously if there's a religious type preference or, you know, they come from a certain religious background, then we'll do our research if it's something that we're not familiar with, so that way we make sure that we know,
okay,
you know, what their beliefs are, and we can cater to that and work with them in a way that they understand or that's acceptable to their religious background.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, you know, there's when people are, you know, messing with like Ouija boards and all those things, now do they like understand that, like, when they're doing that, do they understand that, like, when they're opening the door, so to speak, excuse me. Basically, do they understand that they're putting themselves like at risk, or do they just not know what they're doing?
I think they've all heard the warning, but I mean, just like everything growing up with your parents, they tell you not to do something because they've been there, done that. What's the first mm-hmm. thing you're going to do? Out of curiosity, you're going to go do it, or because. And I'm one of those. When somebody tells me I can't do something, chances are I'm going to do it, even if it's just out of spite. And that's something that obviously I have to work on a regular basis. And there's a reason. I mean, we do have an investigation coming up that we can't talk about, but Chris told me I couldn't go. And I'm like, wait a minute. But once, you know, of course, that kind of intrigued me with the reasoning behind it. But, you know, again, with the warnings at hand, it was the best decision that we could make with my kids and my family life. But I think, you know, kids see it. They hear stories about it. Their parents or their friends' parents have used it. And there's going to be a ghost story that you heard at summer camp or at a campfire, and, you know, you're going to want to know. And so mm-hmm. I don't think they necessarily go in thinking that, you know, everybody thinks it's not going to happen to me. And then when it does, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's that whole invincible thing. You never think it's going to be you, and then it happens to you, and it's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, well, as far as, like, when you guys are, you know, on an investigation, and so something like that happens, like, you mess with a Ouija board or something like that. Like, now, have you ever, like, had an investigation where they have, what's the word I want to use? Where they've actually were so scared that they actually just moved outside of the house.
Yes, the family in New Orleans that Chris was talking about, where I was convinced that there really wasn't much going on until evidence came in. They had left on the 4th of July, and we went in, I think, 2 weeks later, and they had not been back in the house since then. So they did not go back into the house until after we completed the investigation and the cleansing was done. They just flat out refused. So that was the first time I had ever encountered a family that, you know, just left their home. I couldn't imagine doing that personally.
Yeah, well, that must be pretty hard. When you leave your home, I mean, I don't know. Like, I know that sometimes, I know that people have just like left their home because, you know, it just gets so bad. But I just, you know, and I, you know what, you know what's really sad is how that, you know, I wish there was like a way to what's the word I want to use? To basically have people more like aware that there are people out there to help them and things like that. You know, as far as your cases go, would you say that most of your cases are like not like hostile, like negative, but you know, or like mild, just not like negative, but you know, just where there's some where there is activity, but it's not like anything, you know, bad. Are most of your cases like that, or you know, where they're just kind of mild, or are they kind of like, you know, negative?
Some have been negative, but you're also, I'm sure you know, when you're talking to somebody who isn't in the field or hasn't experienced anything like it, to them, it's much larger and much more threatening and a lot more scary than something that we encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that plays a big role into, you know, our mindset when we're going in, something that the family could be terrified of is something that we've all encountered before and isn't so bad for us. So, that's something that when talking to clients, I personally try to make them aware that it may seem really bad right now, but it's only because they're allowing it to be. So I try to really, when speaking with clients especially, is make sure that they continue to look on the positive side. Because if they're doing that, then they're not allowing that to take over them. And we don't want that. So, I mean, it's all... Denham Springs definitely, I would say, was not very pleasant. Whatever was going on in that house was not very pleasant. New Orleans, I don't think it was a harmful spirit. I think it was just, you know, somebody there doing their thing, but I don't think it was necessarily there to harm anybody. I just think that because the family hasn't dealt with anything like that, that, mm-hmm. you know, it's very hard on them.
Yeah, well, and I'd imagine, like, after, you know, you have to be going through some kind of, like, paranormal activity, you know, I'm sure it's hard to, you know, get over, you know, going back inside your house or, you know, knowing that whatever was going on before, you know, is gone. You know, and you know, it's kind of like you still, like, in your head, you still kind of know that, you know, all this stuff is going on in your house. So, I mean, as far as, like, your case and Denham Springs, you know, the family, you know, I don't know if they're still kind of scared that could happen again.
Right. And, I mean, you've got all the movies coming out, like The Conjuring and all the Paranormal Activity movies, and that's what people see. And so, you know, that's a huge jump from what you're going to see on a regular basis or in a regular home. Those are few and far between. But for some people, that's how they feel. So you have to respect those feelings and make sure that, you know, make sure you can help them not feel that way. But I think the media and the ghost shows, and I'm guilty of watching all the ghost shows. My son and I love to watch the ghost shows together. We have a mommy and son date night every Wednesday and watch Ghost Hunters. But that's what they're seeing. So when they relate their experiences to you, it could be, you know, that's what they're feeling. They're feeling like what they saw on TV or in the movies. And that's just because they've never experienced it. So again, just like with anything else in life, you have certain experiences or certain feelings because of what you see on TV or what you see on the internet or what you see in a movie. And that's something that, you know, I definitely like to take into account when talking with people.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I kind of also, you know, think that when people, you know, in this day and age, when they see those movies, they kind of get the idea that, you know, this is what it's really like, and,
something's gonna grab my leg or, you know.
Right. I mean, it's, and you, when do you see, other than, you know, the movie Casper, when do you see a scary haunted movie that isn't a violent type of haunting?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
you can watch Casper the Friendly Ghost, but, you know, what you're seeing, and you're paying to be scared. That's what you're seeing. So automatically, and in some cases, I've heard of people who watch these movies and automatically assume because a light blew out or, you know, something knocked on the wall and it could have just been the house adjusting, they automatically assume the worst and their house is haunted like the movie they watched. So
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when talking with clients, you need to make sure that everything is in the best perspective it can be, and you have to remain positive and make sure you're not comparing it to something that you saw on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, has anyone ever been like, maybe that wasn't haunted, or maybe they had some kind of, you know, mental illness? Have you ever had an experience like that where, you know, it's not really, you know, the house or anything else, it's really just kind of them thinking that something's, you know, happening, or they're paranoid, or, you know?
Personally, no. Actually, I had more experiences with that working at the law office than I have doing it this way. But
okay.
Luckily, no. But I'm sure the longer that, you know, our team is together, and the longer that we do this, it very well may come up. And not quite
mm-hmm.
sure, even though I do have my degree in behavioral sciences and have taken all those courses. How do you tell somebody their house isn't haunted, they're just crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, no, that has yet to happen for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, excuse me, when you hang out with your team members, do you guys do anything else besides investigate the paranormal? Do you guys do anything else like hang out or anything besides investigating?
Yeah. I mean, really, we're probably a big dysfunctional family, and we definitely put the fun in dysfunctional. We all get along
mm-hmm.
really great. So, of course, we, you know, eat dinner and hang out, and my son's birthday party, they're just as much a part of the family as anybody else is. So we're just, I mean, that's really what it is. It's a big family. And we
mm-hmm.
all have our ups and downs because we are a big family, but I think that's kind of healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the city of New Orleans, now I wasn't curious if you knew. Well, the in City Park, and I wasn't sure if you have personally investigated there, you know, that during the, you know, 1800s, early 1900s, that you had duels in the park and things like that. Did you ever,
mm-hmm.
Ever had a chance to investigate there? Because I've talked to Chris about that, and I wasn't sure, you know, if you guys had investigated there yet.
I haven't. I'm not sure if Chris has, but if I remember correctly, and I could be totally wrong, you may have to check it out. If I remember correctly, according to Louisiana law, you can still have duels, although it doesn't happen. But
yeah.
If I remember correctly, it is still written in law that they are allowed.
Okay. Huh.
You may have to double check that.
Yeah.
That's just off the top of my head. But
yeah. You know, it sounds like a lot of the, what's the word, like, it sounds like a, it's written on paper, but, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not
right.
Kind of like murder, you know, kind of like killing someone, but I don't know, it's kind of interesting.
Definitely. A lot of New Orleans and Louisiana is very interesting. We're still in Napoleonic code of law, and and we have such a just interesting and unique history compared to any other part of the country and world. We're kind of out there as a whole. But it's definitely probably one of the best places to be in this for paranormal reasons.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, I've always enjoyed, you know, plantations and things like that. I know that in Florida we really don't have plantations. I mean, we have, like, they're not like plantations like Louisiana, you know, would have, but they're kind of the same concept, but they're not as big, but they're kind of like houses, but it was like a slave house, like off to the side somewhere, or, you know, and I think, you know, they're just like really interesting, you know, to kind of, you know, see the history and, you know, investigate there, and, you know, and it's kind of interesting to kind of, you know, see that the history is kind of still living, and, you know, it's just pretty weird, you know, to see, you know, like you get an EVP of, like, you know, like an old slave that used to live, you know, in the house, you know, to kind of see history kind of still living. It's, you know, and I think that's pretty interesting. I don't know, like, when you go to, have you guys investigated the plantation?
I've been to the Myrtles. I didn't have the Myrtles Plantation, one of the big ones here, where Chloe, the servant, had poisoned the children and wanted to nurse them back to health to make her master happy, and she ended up killing him with oleander. But didn't have one single experience there. I was really kind of bummed. But, you know, the history of it all and the history of the location and what went on there is really fascinating to me. I love the history behind the locations, and I love the science behind the paranormal. What's that?
Was that the Myrtles Plantation?
Yes, the Myrtles Plantation.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, you know, and I heard a lot of people have been there, and they said it was pretty cool.
It is very cool, even just for a visit.
I'm trying to remember, like, I watched one plantation, it was on Ghost Adventures, and I never heard of it before, but it was called, like, it was somewhere near, it was north of Baton Rouge, and, I had to find it again, but that was kind of interesting how, you know, I don't know what they call it, but I guess I'll call it voodoo. Like the voodoo, and, you know, when you see the X's on the walls and things like that, I wasn't sure. Now, how does the voodoo religion and the African religions that were brought to New Orleans, how do they play into, you know, in something when you go into a haunting? Have you ever had experience, you know, any kind of like voodoo being involved, or, you know, any kind of like, you know, like magic practices or anything like that?
No. Not really. It's prevalent, and you can walk around New Orleans and see it, and they have shops for it, and usually more than, you know, they have voodoo, they have hoodoo, you name it, and, I mean, everything is centered around Marie Laveau. But personally, I don't think any of us have been in a case where voodoo or any of those type of rituals have really been at play. It would be really interesting. I'd love to be able to learn more about that side of New Orleans, but again, it's a lot of people see that, especially outside of New Orleans, as more of a cult type activity. But for the people who actually practice it, it is very much a religion to them, just as much as a religion can be for anybody else.
Yeah. You know, and I know that we kind of have that here, but it's more like down south a little bit, like Tampa, Miami. You know, they have voodoo there. You know, there's a large, like, Haitian population. But, you know, it's pretty interesting to, like, see how, you know, how they believe, like, the living and the dead and coexisting, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just, you know, I don't really understand it, you know, as much because, you know, I've never really met anyone who, you know, who practices voodoo. But, you know, and it's as far as New Orleans goes, you know, and you think about all the battles and, you know, and all the destruction that happened there. You know, I mean, it was, you know, it's such a huge city. And, you know, I mean, I know that a lot of people kind of claim that New Orleans is the most haunted place, you know, in the country. Do you agree with that? Do you think that New Orleans has a lot of, like, haunted history and that maybe it could be, like, one of the most haunted places in the country?
I think so, and I think New Orleans is very much more open-minded as a whole about the activity and about life after death and spirits and paranormal stuff, good and bad. I think as a whole, it's not so much of a taboo type thing. It's very open. I mean, we do tours, like vampire tours and cemetery tours and ghost tours, and people actually come. Just tons of tourists come to Louisiana just for the haunted history.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think
maybe
it, whether or not it's the most haunted place, I don't think you could probably ever really scientifically prove that as of now. But I think as a whole, for the people who come to Louisiana and New Orleans, we probably are the most haunted just because it's so out in the open and accepted here.
Mm-hmm. Now, New Orleans, you know, is it like, would you consider New Orleans to be like a fast-paced city or just a really laid-back city?
Very laid back.
Okay. And if people would
I
be
would
like,
say
oh,
laid
it's
back.
Kind of the easy trail, so, you know, what do you guys think? No, but I wasn't sure because, you know, I've never been there. So, okay. Yeah, cause it looks pretty
well,
laid back.
It's definitely
you know?
Worth a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and what's, you know, interesting about New Orleans is that it has such, like, a unique, you know, characteristics, you know, than most U.S. cities because it just kind of has its own, like, culture where, you know, you go to...
Definitely.
You know, some of the northeastern cities and, yeah, I mean, they have their own cultures, but it's not like New Orleans. New Orleans is just completely different. Yeah.
It is. It very much is. I mean, from people to homes to life, we're very, very different than the standard, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, do you guys, this is, you know, you have tours and all that. Do you guys, when you guys do you charity tours? Now, is that actually going to be like a just a tour throughout the city, or are you doing like one specific place?
It should be throughout. If it's like every other tour, then it would be throughout the city. I'm sure that might be kind of difficult, so it may have to be a, you know, on this night or on this occasion, we'll do this location, because obviously it takes time to set up, get ready, explain everything, get equipment going, get everybody situated, but it would be a wonderful thing for New Orleans as a whole. It's such a, our community is so great about giving and helping and being there for one another. So I think it's just another thing to add to the paranormal checklist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I don't know, like, what you know, draws people to New Orleans, you know, specifically. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, the history or the culture or the, you know, tours or anything. But, what would you say, you know, what makes New Orleans unique when it comes to the paranormal? Like, why do people come there for the paranormal? You know me, because there are, like, other places, I guess, in the country you can go to. You do, like, tours. But why do you think people come to New Orleans to do paranormal tours?
Probably because of our history. I mean, we have the pirate history. You have Marie Laveau. You have the LaLaurie Mansion. And it's never been... I think it's just a fascinating thing that you can walk down a street and go into a voodoo shop. You can go to Lafitte's Bar. You can go to a plantation where, you know, horrible things may have gone on. There's just so much to New Orleans. And on top of that, it's the people who came to New Orleans. You have French, you have African-American, Creole, American, Indians. I mean, you have every walk of life here, and it's all been, you know, in the gumbo pot.
Yeah.
And so it's just so rich. History, paranormal experiences, the walk of life. I mean, it's just out of the ordinary for most people. And I think that's probably what truly draws a lot of people to New Orleans.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, like, as far as rebuilding goes, have you guys experienced, like a lot of people moving into the city? I don't know if you knew, but...
No, not really. I mean, we still have a lot of people that were displaced. We've built back and we've, you know, I don't want to say we've completely recovered from Katrina because there are still people who haven't and things that have not come back since Katrina. But a lot of people left for Katrina and just never came back.
Yeah.
But,
what about
you know, and then again, that there's another part of our history right there, and you add that to, that's a big paranormal hotspot topic for the area is our, you know, spirits from Katrina still here now.
Yeah. Well, what about like your town? How was it affected by Hurricane Katrina?
My town, we're right across the lake from New Orleans, and we actually took the eye of the storm. So we had massive damage as well. But we're a strong city. There's no way to keep us down very long, and there was just an outpouring of support from other communities, from our own communities. Your house may not have been built on time, so you would go to somebody else's house and help them rebuild. So it was definitely a bad situation that, you know, could have been a lot worse, but you take it as it comes and you make the best out of the situation. And I think it just made everybody a lot stronger, especially in the Slidell community.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know that you guys recently had a hurricane and you had some flooding, but, you know, I wasn't like sure as far as like, you know, cause I knew that all the water kind of didn't like go, it didn't reach the French Quarter, but it like, kind of, you know, like the eastern part of the city and then, like, the western part of Slidell.
And the rivers and stuff surrounding Slidell. Well, now that the levees are built up, what makes it really difficult is it keeps a lot of New Orleans really safe, but it pushes more water into the lake, which pushes more water into Slidell and the rivers. So that's something that there's obviously going to have to be, you know, a remedy for it at some point, but...
Yeah, I'm glad you guys haven't gotten any hurricanes this year, though. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I know
it's
that...
It's still early for us, though.
Yeah. I know that, I don't know if I'm getting any hurricanes. I'm trying to remember. I think until, like, on the end of August, I think is... Yeah, I think from the end of August is the time that, you know, my side of Florida usually kind of doesn't really get anything. So
that's
when
we start up. Usually August and September are the hot spots for us.
But I just want to thank you and Chris, you know, so much for just, you know, coming on tonight and talking. I know the show was supposed to be 2 hours, but, you know, I was with Chris and, you know, Amy being not on tonight, you know, I just wanted to, you know, and the show early tonight. And, you know, thank you and Chris for being on tonight, you know.
Well, we definitely appreciate it, Chris.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate it too, and thank you so much for coming on.
Not a problem. We always enjoy it.
All right. Be sure to join Paranormal Access Radio on Friday at our new time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 10 and 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you for coming on and supporting us and listening to our show tonight, guys. Bye-bye.